And welcome back to DC Signal to Noise. That's right, you get, it's like spearmint gum. It's two, or what was the old mint?
Two
mints in one. Yeah. it's a two for Tuesday, I guess, of DC Signal to Noise on this Friday. No, we appreciate, if you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to the first part of this week's podcast, where we take a different perspective on what we covered last week with Randy Russell on the proposed move of the research services out of the D.C. area. Randy Russell was very much in favor of it, and we talked to a couple of former heads of USDA research who are not in favor. So be sure and go back and listen to that from this week's podcast as well. But Jim, let's turn to the news, or not so much news, of this week, starting with, we thought today was going to be a big day. We had all of this USDA and World Board data that was piled up because the government was shut down for 35 days, and it was all going to be coming out in one mass dump today, and then the markets pretty much yawned. There wasn't much there.
No. USDA did trim the corn and bean crops more than the average trade estimate, and they also trimmed the ending stocks. I thought biggest in quotes, item in the reports was the very low, I think, winter wheat seedings estimate that, again, surprised the trade. That may eventually and probably will come back into play into the market, because that just adds more potential volatility to those wheat markets, because now Mother Nature even becomes more important.
And the World Board did not trim much from soybean exports to China, only like 3 million metric tons. Were you surprised by that?
I was looking for a comment on, and there wasn't any, on how the recent Chinese purchases may have impacted, if any. And they really didn't say much at all. So I think that's another one that we're going to have to see in the weeks ahead. What is the total tonnage of these expected Chinese purchases of U.S. soybeans? So it's kind of wait rather than, getting it right now. But these numbers will serve as the core. I think you saw them drop the Brazilian soybean crop, I think, I'm just going memory now, to 117 million metric tons. And, the pressure points on that could go even lower, and the resulting potential for U.S. soybean exports.
Do you get the sense that we don't necessarily have the full story yet, that this was not a complete catch-up for what was missed in that 35-day shutdown?
Well, absolutely, especially on the export side. We need to see more of the weekly export sales reports on the catch up, the commitments of traders from a tonal of where the bulls and the bears are. But I do think we have a solid look at now on the international side, because the WASD or the S&D report was current as of the day it was released, meaning today. So the supply, we know we have a pretty good handle on. The demand, somewhat. That's always more subjective on the demand side, but at least the international country estimates, South America, et cetera, I think we have some true updated information here. But it's on the demand side that I think we could see some surprises ahead.
And do you think those will be good surprises or bad surprises?
I think that they will be good, because I think with the Russian situation on wheat now, you saw it in the U.S. Friday morning, getting some of the sales of wheat to Egypt. I think that's the first of probably several to come out. I think there's some good news here, not only on the row crop side, but maybe we'll get this beef and pork market turned around with some potential exports to China.
In a lot of ways, wasn't this really kind of the best scenario we could hope for, that it wasn't something that drove the markets wildly either way, and at the end of it was marginally bullish?
Yeah, because it was the carryover situation, especially even in wheat, where you got a friendly winter wheat in tensions number, you're still looking at a monstrous carryover for wheat and soybeans. Even though soybean carryover went down relative to December, there's still a chunk of soybeans to eat through here. So you can't say bullish in soybeans in the same sentence, not with the carryover situation, what it is. Corn is a different situation relative to the demand base. So that's why this upcoming competition for plantings in the 2019 spring planting season will be a significant one to watch. And of course, the weather is always important.
All right, well, let's move back to the beginning part of the week. State of the Union address, it was delayed a week because of that government shutdown. The president came out, started talking about wanting to work with Congress and that they needed to find bipartisan compromise, and then fired the shot about basically challenging them to shut down the Mueller probe. And, Jim, the signal that came to me out of that State of the Union address is that the president's agenda in this year in no way involves Congress. He is going to be committed to doing whatever he can through administrative authority and really not much focus on anything that requires congressional approval to move forward.
Well, the signal I got was that there are areas in which if both political parties, not just one, both political parties want consensus, they can get it. And that's relative, even though he didn't talk too much, but at least he mentioned infrastructure funding, getting...
Yeah, but he offered absolutely no detail on those, which you would think if he were serious about using that as something to bring both sides together, which he very well could, but there would have been some detail there to do that. But it was just, no, let's work on infrastructure, and that's all that was said.
Well, usually if you give too much detail, then it becomes wonky. But they should have had
a target value and targets of what they want to where they want to spend that infrastructure money, at least.
I agree. There should have usually you have if you want to focus, you have fact sheets and an initiative out before you give the State of the Union address, and that was lacking. The administration has tried several times to get the infrastructure reform off ground zero, and they haven't been able to. So,
and that's something that would very quickly get the unions behind it.
Well, you would hope, yes. But I'm not going to give up on infrastructure yet because I hear from both political parties there could be consensus odds increasing on that. You saw it on prescription drug costs. There's a fervent desire from both political parties to do that, and he mentioned that. Under the border security, he didn't waffle whatsoever on that. So he had some uplifting statements to make. Now, his naysayers will say, well, that's the teleprompter Trump, as opposed to the Twitter Trump that we, get. But he hasn't gone and dug himself in a hole after what most surveys show was a very good State of the Union speech, a CBS poll, CNN poll, etc., that he frequently, either the next day or a couple days later, digs himself into his own hole. He hasn't done that yet. So, some people tell me the signal they got out of this was this is the first 2020 re-election campaign speech that he gave. And yeah, if that was the case, he really cleared the line between the parties on relative to not only the border issue and national security and immigration, but also in his support of the competitiveness of the U.S. economy, capitalism versus socialism. And that's where he had an opening there when the TV cameras spotted a number of the white-suited Democrats not standing up in defense of capitalism. Yeah. That may have been an overreach on their part.
Well, and it definitely plays into the politics at hand in this election, where you are seeing some prominent Democrats take some quite, in fact, admitting, saying publicly that they are socialists. And in pursuing Medicare for all and free college tuition and several other things, that would be on that far left agenda.
Well, it's really a battle of the Democrats in the party.
Yeah, just to, like the Republicans have been doing for a while now.
From liberal to very liberal to democratic socialism, and that is going to play out in the primaries, et cetera. And we saw that with the introduction this week of a very general binding, non-binding resolution relative to the new green deal.
The
new green deal, where it was a dramatic proposal that would substantially change many facets of the U.S. lives.
Yeah, and I guess the bottom line, as you were saying, the president took advantage of that opportunity to really draw that bright line that is getting deeper and deeper between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party going into this 2020 election.
That speech was very crafty, sneaky at times from a political arena when you look back at it. I thought the president should have been faulted at the beginning. I do not think it was an oversight when he didn't acknowledge the return to the speakership in the House to Nancy Pelosi. I thought that was not well done whatsoever, because you have to give everyone their due, and he did not. I think that was a negative of his speech.
Well, yeah, and those are the things that frustrated me on the speech, was that there were plenty of opportunities in there to really move things along and find and foster that unity that he talked about at the start of the speech, like infrastructure, like prescription drug reform, and several other of the things that he brought up. But because he didn't dwell on them, because he spent more of his time talking about issues that really are there because they drive that distinction between the Republicans and the Democrats. I thought there were opportunities missed to really provide an opening to bring some of these other bipartisan issues forward.
To a point, yes. But he spent a lot of time on the issues that has made this country great, with the war heroes, et cetera, space heroes, Buzz Aldrin, et cetera. And that goes a long way. That tilts at your heartstrings there. So I think, and that's more Trumpian that way. Think we had a little bit of everything. But I think it was really a call for more of that he sees the divide here in the United States between the system that we've had, capitalism, where innovators can innovate, you can be wealthy, and that's not a sin, versus those who want a substantially different system, and they want to do it fast. And I think that's the dichotomy that we have in this country now. Those who want this country to go slower, like saying, whoa, we're going too fast on some of these changes, versus those who say, you're not going fast enough. I think he caught a little of that in his speech.
Yeah, and if he can clearly deliver that message through the campaign, that may very well be an effective campaign.
He has to be consistent, absolutely, and it's hard for him to do that, so we're going to see. But his first slot out for re-election, in most surveys, not what I say, was overall pretty good. That 75% area of the American public saying it was a good speech is probably the best he'll ever get.
As we said, there no detail really at all on infrastructure, but what are you hearing in the Beltway? If there is an infrastructure deal, will the priorities of agriculture, most notably inland waterways, be part of that infrastructure deal?
Absolutely. You do not have infrastructure reform without the key competitiveness nature of the waterways and the goal to improve all the systems, the port facilities, the inland waterways, etc. And we need to put pencil to paper on that. It's very similar to the U.S.-China trade talks. We got to get down to writing these principles that both countries want, and I think we're going to get there on both. But we've got about 9 months to do this under a host of issues, and infrastructure is one of them. For the life of me, I don't know why there has not been consensus push on this infrastructure, because this country needs it in so many levels: trains, the bridges, the highway system, the inland waterway system, the port facilities, etc. It's all these squabbles over how you fund it. Well, much like we're seeing in the 17 appropriators that will very likely come up with a plan by Monday to keep the government funded, you got to sit down in a room and deck it out and come to an agreement. And I think they could be if they get behind closed doors and try to get an infrastructure plan done.
All right. Well, you just brought up the two things that we really need that Jim Wiesmeyer translation on, because there was a lot of mixed signal and noise this week. Let's start with China and then go to the budget negotiations. But China this week, again, we keep hearing positive things. Things are moving along. But then comes news that President Xi and President Trump are not going to meet by the March 1st deadline. So what do we take out of that, Jim?
Well, the signal there was, I know, some White House officials were getting nervous that it was getting too far out in front that they would meet prior to the March 1 deadline, March 2, depending how you say it, no later than, March 1. But so they kind of wanted to cool it down. And of course, then they sent out the officials like Larry Kudlow, the National Economic Council director, to kind of, put the, kibosh on some of these things. And then President Trump himself indicated here that some of that was noise. The signal that I want the listeners to hear is that some initial Trump administration trade officials are probably on their way already to Beijing. But U.S. Trade Rep Bob Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin will be in Beijing probably mid to late week next week. Once they have their talks with their counterparts, it's the signal they give the White House, in particular President Trump, where we'll get the next step on can there be a meeting to resolve the remaining issues, or at least have a benchmark to resolve some of the more thorny issues, or will we indeed wait beyond that March 1st time frame? We don't know that yet. So that means this coming week is going to be big signals. So take your cue following the Lighthizer Mnuchin talks in Beijing.
Do you think they it looks like again, we continue to have progress on agriculture and largely in announcements that China is going to make additional purchases. But again, the sticky issues are these intellectual property issues. Are the Chinese going to agree to something that will satisfy the U.S. concerns in this? Or are we going to come down to the wire, keep thinking we're going to get close, but never quite get there?
Well, you won't have an agreement unless there's verifiable, unambiguous enforcement, is the way Lighthizer has been saying that. It has to be a comprehensive agreement with unambiguous enforcement. And if you don't have that, you're not going to have an agreement. And if there's no agreement, you're going to see a decided downturn in a number of U.S. commodities and the financial markets. Look how the equities markets have been riveted to any news on this. You saw it this week when it was like a tick on a corn chart. I was watching it when Larry Kudlow came on Fox Business Network and indicated that there's a lot of distance between now and the future on the issues. The markets went down. So no, I think Trump, if he wants an agreement, it's going to have to be pretty rock solid. Now your point is, can China can they deliver? Because it's an agreement from their side, too. That's the thorny issue. We're going to have to watch out for the signals. I can't speak for China, but there's got to be benchmarks for follow-through on this. The China watchers that I trust the most, more signals than noise, are telling me there is some give on the part of China, but we're going to see if that will satisfy the White House. Frankly, I think that they haven't given Chinese leaders the total benchmarks that they'll need. And that's why some of these meetings have to continue, John, to get, again, the agreement, our potential agreement with benchmarks for follow through enforcement on paper. Until then, I don't blame China for not wanting to agree to anything. They're not going to put their best thoughts down until they know a solution is at hand.
All right, well, then let's move on to the other issue that we need some Jim Wiesmeyer clarification and clairvoyance on, and that is the budget agreement. Are we going to have one by the 15th, by next week?
Well, there's two part there. You will have a budget agreement. You will not have another partial government shutdown. Both sides are saying that. Now, will President Trump go along with any agreement? I think that he will, because he saw that pressure building almost by the hour near the end of that 35-day last time on the partial government shutdown. The second part is, will we have it by the 15th, by Friday, you know, this coming week? That'll depend, and if we don't, then they'll have a mini continuing resolution. They don't want that. They want to get it done. Most of the people that I've contacted on both sides of the political aisle say substantial progress was made this week. They're going to continue to work this weekend. We may even get an announcement of an agreement over the weekend. If not, sometime Monday. And the reason you have to have it Monday is the process of getting it through to be able to vote on this compromise position by the Friday deadline. And so if they go into Tuesday, Wednesday, then you're going to have the talk of the continuing resolution, RCR. But boy, I would say the feeling you get, the signals you get in this town, is that the 17 appropriators that are in this conference committee are taking a bipartisan approach, and they're used to working with the, you know, parties at hand, and I think they're going to come up with a solution here.
And how long of a solution do you think in this? How long is it? Another relative can kick, or do we get a full year funding out of this?
We will get a full year funding out of it, and then we're on to 2020 fiscal year that starts October 1. Of course, you know, the keys are what compromise will there be on the whatever you want to call it, border security. The Democrats want to put some stipulations on it. Will they be too onerous for Trump, etc.? Those are the last details that I know that they're working on and working out.
Is it fair to say that there will be some sort of funding for border structure that is controlled by Congress rather than the White House, and as you said, has some very very strict requirements on it, on where it is and what it involves?
They'll want to put benchmarks. Again, much like the U.S.-China trade agreement, they want to put some benchmarks of how that border funding is actually implemented. They can't go too far, because this is a fine line, especially when you're dealing with a president like Trump.
All right. So what are you watching next week for Signal?
I'm watching the funding mechanisms over the weekend. I fully expect an agreement either, Sunday or sometime Monday. And then how the initial talks of U.S. trade officials go in Beijing, and whether or not Bob Lighthizer says anything about the forthcoming talks. I don't think he will. I think he's smart enough to shut up, which, most people think, wish that other people would as well. But those are the big ones. And then we're going to expect some more daily sales coming out, especially from China in their purchases of soybeans, and hopefully that they'll purchase some wheat, corn, and some meat. So in the coming days, let's hope we get some follow through buys on the daily announcements.
All right, before we let you go, I know it's the busy travel season for you. Where are you headed next?
oh, I'm going down to Jonesboro, Arkansas for a meeting there at the beginning of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I fly out from Memphis to San Diego, where the Crop Insurance Research Bureau, CURB, is having their annual meeting. So I'll be there Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and that's just two biggies this week. I've got more later on in the following week, but those are my two this week, John.
And those organizations out there that want to get the Jim Wiesmeyer Political Insight at their conference, where can they find you?
My last name at gmail.com, WIESEMEYER at gmail.com, John.
All right, before we wrap up, as I said at the beginning of part one of this week's podcast, and don't forget to go back and listen to that, to the discussion of moving those USDA research offices out of Washington. But as I mentioned there, we really appreciate the feedback you all have been giving us, and it's been growing and growing, and we love reading it. Keep it coming and keep pushing us. We appreciate your thoughts, especially when they don't necessarily agree with ours. We like that pushing.
Absolutely. Absolutely, John. And the signal that we got from last week's program and this week is sometimes the signals are very hard to read. There's very little noise in this issue relative to relocating ERS and NIFA. There's just differences of opinion. And that's where a program, hopefully like Signal to Noise, can air it out.
Yeah, hopefully so. So go back and listen to part one again on the AgriTalk app, agweb.com, or iTunes, Google Play, wherever you find your podcast. Thanks, Jim.
Sure.
That's Jim Wiesmeyer, DC analyst for Pro Farmer. I'm John Harris, news director for Farm Journal. And that wraps up this week's DC Signal to Noise.